Dr. Park.
Okay, at this time, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker, Mike.
My name's Mike. I'm an alcoholic. I have a sobriety date. That's 5/15 of 07. I have a sponsor. I've worked the steps. I in turn am a sponsor. I have actually two of my previous sponsors here tonight and one of my sponsees. And, you know, I just do this thing to the best of my ability one day at a time. Congratulations to the chip takers. Welcome to the newcomers. You never have to drink or use again, even if you want to, you know. And I know that to be true because it's been my experience. Started drinking real young. Grew up poor white kid on welfare, single parent home. Didn't have a dad. Actually never even met my dad until I was 17 years old, and that was because I sought him out. But I started drinking real young because I wanted to fit in, you know. I wanted to not feel me. I didn't want to feel different. I didn't want to be different. I just wanted to be like the other suburban kids in Morro Bay, you know. Two parents, both work, you know, whatever they wanted, whenever they wanted. And that wasn't my story. And it still isn't my story, but I had an older brother in high school when I was in elementary school, and he was my father figure. You know, he was the only male role model other than my grandfather that I had in my life, and hanging out with him put alcohol into my system. And so I became a master manipulator at a very early age, and I would bitch at my mom about not having a father figure in my life, which would in turn have her bitch at my brother to hang out with me, which would in turn put alcohol into my system. So I bitched at my mom a lot for not having a father figure in my life. And I had to work for my booze. You know, I was a smuggler because nobody's going to check the 6- and 7-year-old kid going into the movie theaters. You know, nobody's going to check the 6- or 7-year-old kid's blanket going into Santa Maria Raceway. You know, so I had to work for my booze. And usually payment was a couple of tall boys of Sapporo. And for a 6- or 7-year-old kid, that does him just right. Sometimes over the mark. A lot of the times over the mark, because I was never one to leave anything half full, you know. I had to finish it because that's what men did. At least that's what I thought men did. You know, many a times I was carried out of the movies or carried out of Santa Maria Raceway. You know, they'd throw me in the back of the truck, back when you could actually ride in the back of a truck. And I'd sit back there with one of my tall boys and drink it on the way down and bounce all over the place. And then I wouldn't even remember going home. Sometimes I'd come to, come through the door and yak. And my mom's like, oh, what happened to him? Oh, he must have ate something bad or something, you know, some bullshit excuse. But you know, that's pretty much how my life went. I needed booze in my system, and if I had to lie, cheat, and steal to get it, that's what I would do. I just manipulated everything and everybody in my life to get what I needed. You know, ended up in group homes. Just screwed my life up since the very beginning, you know, from the time that I had will in my life, you know. If five, six, 7 years old is the time that I just ran rampant, you know. If I wasn't drinking, I was stealing. If I wasn't stealing, I was thinking about stealing or thinking about drinking or whatever it was, you know. And that's just how my life went, you know, until I got sober. I could spend an hour on my drunkalog, you know, but I don't like to focus on that anymore because that's what it was like, you know, and it's supposed to be what it's like, what happened, and what it's like now. I like where my life is at today, so I like to spend more of my time in what it's like now, but you know, I drank away wife and three kids, I drank away jobs, I drank away friends, I drank away everything, you know. I was the lesser companion, you know. I was the guy that would steal your shit and help you look for it. And say, I don't know what to tell you, and then they wouldn't see me for a few weeks, you know. I was a fucking dirtbag, period, you know? I was a dirtbag. I was a shitty husband. I was a shitty father. I was actually just talking about this earlier today. Somewhere in between Thanksgiving and Christmas of 2004, my then wife said that she couldn't take it anymore, couldn't do it anymore, and she wanted me out of the house. And I was crushed, you know? Didn't see it coming, had no inkling, nothing. But she said I could stay until the first of the year to get through the holidays with the kids. And I said, okay. So I got through the holidays. I thought things were okay. January 1st, she said, today's the day. I was like, fuck, you didn't change your mind, you know? Son of a bitch. So, you know, once again, I found myself bag in hand with everything that I could fit into a duffel bag on somebody else's doorsteps, and I need to crash somewhere, you know? And it was a sad day, but it was a happy day. It was a sad day as a person, as a father, as a husband, but as an alcoholic, it was a fucking great day because I can finally drink and use the way I need to drink and use to be okay. And that's where my ism bloomed, you know. I drank and I used and I just did what I could, you know, to stay loaded, to stay numb, to stay not feeling. This was back in Oklahoma. Did some geographics, you know. We all do geographics. Morro Bay Police Department told me to get the fuck out of town or I was going to prison. And I didn't like the prison idea, so, you know, found myself once again bag in hand on my dad's doorstep this time. You know, he's like, well, I'm going to Oklahoma. If you're here, you can go. So 2 days later, I was standing on his doorstep in Bakersfield, going to Oklahoma, you know. And while I was out of the house, my wife suggested that I come back to California because lovely men in blue in Morro Bay decided to press charges on me even though they said they wouldn't. And so I had 7 felony warrants out for my arrest in California. And my wife suggested, ex-wife suggested, can't even say ex-wife because we're still fucking married 12 years later, but that's besides the point. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, okay? Don't judge me. Shut up, Doug. you know, and I was like, sweet. You know, I'll go back and see my family that I hadn't seen in 12 years. You know, I hadn't seen my mom, my sister, my brother, my nieces, my nephews. Like, sweet, they got good green bud out in Oklahoma. They got good beer out in Oklahoma. It's all right, it'll be a vacation. I'll have to do a little bit of time and whatever. And I came out and spent a couple weeks catching up with the family. Well, no, I came out and spent a couple weeks getting loaded as possible. And went and turned myself in at the county jail out there on Kansas Avenue. And took me like 6 or 8 hours to get arrested, turning myself in at the county jail. I was so pissed. I was so pissed. I kept wanting to leave. My sister's like, no, just wait it out. You're doing the right thing. I was like, God, at least let me go smoke one last bowl, you know, something. Finally, they took me back, and I ended up going to court and whatnot. And because it had been so long, and I turned myself in finally, 12 years later, they took leniency on me and knocked everything down to 2 misdemeanors, and I did 30 days in jail, period. No probation, no nothing. That 28th day of my 30-day sentence, I got a letter from her saying that she didn't want me back. And again, I was crushed. And I had to sit with those feelings for 2 whole days because I couldn't get loaded. I couldn't get loaded in the jail. I mean, I've done some pretty messed up shit, but taking some pills that somebody brought in inside of them just didn't suit my fancy. My release date was 4/20/04. I was like, sweet, 4/20. By 8 o'clock that morning, I'm sitting in my sister's hot tub with a blunt in one hand and a 40 in the other, and that's just pretty much how I stayed for the next few years. Got back into the other drugs. I don't apologize for talking about them because that's what got me here. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be here today. There was always the alcohol, though. You know, I could give or take the other drugs, but there was always the alcohol. Stuff went and came and went, and I was finally tired. I was almost sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was getting to the point where I was getting arrested all the time for drunken public intox, whatever, and I finally hung out in the bar so much that they gave me a job, and I was like, sweet, I am now the man, and I can drink as much as I want and make damn good money and sling booze to my friends, you know, and it was an awesome 3 months. It was an amazing 3 months. It was coming to a close unbeknownst to me. You know, I was riding my little motorcycle to work one afternoon, and I had 3 thoughts in a nanosecond. You know, one was something needed to change. 2 was what needed to change was the amount of chemicals I was putting in my body. And before those 2 even finished was, there's no fucking way I can do it on my own. And it was just a nanosecond of clarity, and that's all I had. You know, that was it. There was no more thought of it afterwards. I got to work and had a couple of shots, and I was behind the bar and never thought of it again until end of sobriety. A couple weeks later, on St. Patty's Day, of 07, I'm in my bar, slammed, bar was packed, and what I didn't know was ABC was in my bar undercover. And I was the big shot, you know. That was my bar, that was my domain. I was taking shots, I was feeding people shots, and I was high, and I was smoking weed. and I was such the big shot that I was just smoking weed out in public right behind my bar, and thinking nothing of it. You know, I'm checking IDs. It's like ABC ain't got nothing, you know, because everybody's of age. And a little later into the night, here comes ABC in full SWAT gear and all of Morobe's finest, and they're pulling people out of the bar left and right, and I'm behind the bar, scared out of my gourd, but still doing my job, and then they pulled me out and asked me some questions, asked me if I'd been smoking pot, and I was like, yeah, I was smoking pot, it was stupid of me, I'm sorry, and they noticed I was on other things, and because I was quite awake after as many shots as I had been doing that they had witnessed and counted, and I just gave up, you know. I was like, you got me dead to rights, you know, they still did the eye test 50 million times. I was like, what the hell are you doing? I've already admitted I'm high. Quit doing that. I can't see. So they did it 5 more times, and, you know, they took me to jail 1 more time. You know, that trip to jail got me a court card. That trip to jail got me a court-appointed program, Prop 36. That court-appointed program got me into sober living, and that sober living got me into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's what happened. You know, I came in, I was like, sweet, I can take a break. I can do this for them to get them off my back and just lay low for a year to 18 months. And sat in the back of the rooms, hood up, looking at everybody's shoes, not listening to anybody. And then for some reason, one morning, I frickin' heard it. I never had to drink or use again, even if I wanted to. And the light went off. Me not drinking. That's a novel idea. I might want to try this thing. And that was my beginning, you know. I started moving forward in the chairs, you know, made it to the front row. Got a sponsor, you know, he was my first sponsor. I was his first sponsee. And we got to work, you know. Told me to call him every day for the first 30 days. Told me to start reading the first 164 pages of the Big Book. That is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm not a big book thumper. I don't know pages. I don't know, you know. I know what's in the big book, but, you know, that's only because I've read it a few times. Every time I read it, you know, I find something new, though, you know. And we worked the steps hard and fast. By the time I hit 6 months of sobriety, by the time I hit, like, 5 months of sobriety, I had already been through my first trip through the steps, and I was getting sober, you know. Had a little podunk job, made some friends, and I knew just enough to be dangerous, and my will started to creep back in, because I made it from the main house to the graduate house, where I had less rules, less testing, less everything. I could come and go as I pleased, didn't have a curfew, and I started to backslide, you know. I wasn't calling my sponsor, I wasn't going to many meetings, and for some reason, a thought came to my mind, what the hell are you doing, you know? You're about to relapse, and you're about to get in more trouble. And for some reason, that caught my attention, and the next morning I'd made a plan to get back into my routine, which was going to the morning meeting, and going to 2 and 3 meetings a day, and calling my sponsor. And that morning I went out and jumped on my little motorcycle. I'm a big boy, and I rode a little Honda 250, so when I say little motorcycle, it was a little motorcycle, you know. But it was my first bike, you know, it was what I learned to ride on. Yes, it was a monkey effing a football. But, you know, I was on my way to the morning meeting at the Pioneer Group, and guy turned left in front of me. I never made it to that meeting. Almost lost my leg. Ended up flying me to Fresno in order to save my leg. Yes, I have my real leg underneath these pants. Last time I spoke here, I got up and showed everybody my scar, but I'm not going to do that this time. It's a hell of a scar, though. It's a nice one. And the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous showed up. They showed up in force. There were nurses in the ER whispering to each other, who the hell is this guy? Because I had 20 to 30 of you people around my bed in the ER, you know. People I barely knew, you know, because I was too busy trying not to be one of you guys without realizing it. And they flew me to Fresno. I wish I knew who suggested they flew me to Fresno, because they were going to take my leg at French, and somebody suggested they fly me to Fresno and they could save my leg, and they did. And you people, you know, took time out of their lives, out of their work week, out of their stuff that they had going on to travel the 2.5 hours to Fresno just to see little old me and to make sure I was doing okay. You know, I was suggested to call central office over there. Say, hey, look, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I'm out of my area and I'm in the hospital. I could really use some help, you know. And I think that was my first resentment in sobriety. A younger guy called me back and asked me if I was just looking for attention. Like, listen here, motherfucker. You know, I'm fucking newly sober, you know, don't even have 6 months of sobriety yet. And just got in a motorcycle accident and trying to save my leg, and I need a meeting, you know. And he said, okay. And they brought some guys in, and they brought a big book, and we read into action, you know. And it saved my ass, you know. I didn't have to abuse the pain medications. I didn't have to lie to get more pain medications. As a matter of fact, after 3 days in the hospital, I told them I wanted no more morphine. Where that came from, I have no idea, because that's not my gig, you know what I mean? Mine's I need more now, you know? The day of the accident, first words out of my mouth when the paramedics arrived was that I'm an alcoholic and an addict. I don't know where that came from either, because that ain't me, you know? I need three of everything now, you know? And somehow that got transferred down the line. They never gave me the morphine button. You know, they would administer it manually. And I was just told, just give me ibuprofen, you know. And so if you can handle it, then that's what we'll do. And so, you know, they sent me home with Vicodin. They never talked to me, you know, but I had people in place, because I was still in sober living, that I had a plan in place that if they did start talking to me, they'd be out of my reach within the hour, you know. And but they never talked to me, you know. I didn't abuse them. I didn't take more than prescribed. I actually took less than prescribed. And I was laid up for a year, you know. And until I could get out of the house, you guys were bringing me meetings. You guys were bringing me food. You guys were bringing me freaking whatever I needed, you know. People that didn't even like me were showing up at my house and bringing me their freaking CDs. Freaking Lou hated my ass, you know, and he brought me one of his Christmas rock CDs, you know. And I've grown great friendships out of that accident, you know. I've always been a hard-headed individual in and out of my alcoholism, and I always tell my higher power that if he's going to send me something, send me with a bag of bricks so I get the message. And this form, you know, this message was in the form of a truck, and I got the message. This is where I belong. This is my family, you know. I've been through that, you know. in sobriety. How I stayed sober, I have no idea. You know, I just didn't pick up, you know, and I asked for help. And you guys were there. Even when I didn't want the help, you guys were there. Knocking on my door, and I get on my walker, and I get to the door, and I'm like, all right, come on in, let's have a meeting, you know. And I just went with the flow, you know. And I am eternally grateful for that time in my sobriety, you know. If it wasn't for that, if I would have walked out that morning, I would have had a flat tire on my motorcycle. I probably would have kicked it over, jumped over the fence, ran to Circle K and grabbed the tall boy. And that wasn't my case, you know. I'm the kind of alcoholic that's going to drink over the little shit. You know, like they talk about the shoelace breaking. You know, that's my reason to drink. But the big shit I seem to handle okay. I recently had to reset my sobriety date. It wasn't a big deal, you know, but, you know, I said my sobriety date is 7-15 of 07. Well, for the first 8 years of sobriety, I claimed 7-7 of 07, or 7-5-7 of 07, sorry. And now it's 5-15 of 07. At the end of May, after I'd already celebrated 8 years of sobriety, I'm driving out to Montana de Oro with my fiance and my two-year-old to go for a hike, and I just happened to glance over at the picnic benches at the campground. I was like, holy shit, my first week of living in sober living, I went out here and drank a beer with a roommate of mine. And so I had to reset my sobriety date. You know, I called my sponsor at the time and said, hey, look, more would have been revealed. This is what happened. I don't know exactly what the date was, so I know it was in my first week, so let's take 8 days, and there we go. Came up with the 15th. Still want to say the 7th all the time, but, you know, because I've been saying 5-7 of 07 for 8 years. But that's not the case today. It's 5-15 of 07. And it's little things like that, if I don't come clean and honest with them, they'll make me want to drink, you know? Today my life is full, you know? It's full of friendship. It's full of family. It's full of forgiveness. It's full of being busy. AA will give you a life that will take you right out of frickin' AA if you let it, you know? My first, first 5 years of sobriety, you know, I was going to 3, 4, 5 meetings a day, you know? And because I had to kind of schedule that would allow that. And I was fellowshipping, I was being a service. And I got sober enough to actually make a job change and start a career, you know, and start driving buses, and that messed with my schedule, and I wasn't able to hit as many meetings, but I was still hitting some, and I suited up and showed up at that job so much they promoted me, and now I'm a supervisor at that job, and my schedule is even busier, you know, and I went from 2 to 3 meetings a day to 2 to 3 meetings a week. And it took some adjusting. It took some getting used to. But I still do as much as I can for AA, you know. AA has given me one of my kids back in my life, you know, one of those three that I traded. You know, I didn't lose anything to my drinking. I traded drugs and alcohol for whatever it was, whether it was a job, whether it was a wife and three kids, whether it was vehicles, it didn't matter, you know. I didn't lose anything to my drinking. I didn't lose my freedom to drinking. I traded all that, you know, in order to drink and use the way I needed to drink and use. And about 2.5 years ago, my oldest daughter, she was 15 at the time, said she wanted to come live with me, you know. I said, all right. And, talk about fear, and emotions and not knowing what the hell to do. I've never been a parent a day in my life. You know, yeah, I've got three freaking kids, but I've never been a parent a day in my life. I was too busy getting drunk. I was too busy having kids, so I didn't have to go to the refrigerator to get my beer. That's ugly, but it's the fucking truth, man. It's the truth. Did I mention I was a dirtbag back then? I used to have this sticker on the back of my Blazer S10. Tattooed white trash. I even lived in a trailer. I loved that sticker. My back window got broke. I was more pissed about the sticker being gone than the freaking window, man. Today I have a bag of tools that I can use when agitated or doubtful, like the big book says. You know, I have a set of spiritual tools that you guys laid at my feet. I can either leave them down there at my feet and let them rust and let them get crusty and not used, or I can keep those up close to my heart and in the forefront of my thought and keep those tools nice and shiny and well working order, you know. But then again, I've got this other toolbox. It's called character defects and selfishness and, oh, selfishness. God, I like to be selfish. Me, me, me. That doesn't work out very well in sobriety. Doesn't work out very well in relationships. I've got a woman in my life that loves me. For me, that puts up with my shit when I'm not the soberest person in the world, you know? No, I haven't gotten drunk or loaded, but, you know, when I take my will back, I get less sober, you know, because I'm living on my will and not God's will. Whatever that God is to you, it doesn't matter. I just call mine God for the simple title, you know? I'm not a religious guy. I just have a higher power, you know? I like to call him huge because he's freaking huge. When I'm having a bad day and I pull up to a gas pump and I've just got the K-Fuck radio going on, you know? And all of a sudden another alcoholic pulls up to the pump beside me. That's my higher power working in my life, you know? Everything gets better. That radio station gets a little quieter. I've got a beautiful little 2-year-old that's never seen me drunk or loaded and never has to see me drunk or loaded, you know. That 16-year-old came to live with me without one single high school credit. She graduated high school in 2 years flat. She spent 1 year at regular high school and spent 1 year at continuation school and got her diploma, won some medals, and I have no idea where she got that from because it's not me, you know, and I'm pretty sure I know her mother and it wasn't her either, but that's somebody else's inventory. You know, and all I could do was teach her accountability and to suit up and show up, you know, because that's all I've done day in and day out. I suit up and I show up. When I get a phone call to go speak, I go speak. When I get a phone call because I got a friend hurting and he just needs to talk, I answer the phone. You know, I wear the symbol of AA around my neck and I don't hide it. I usually make sure to bring it outside of my shirt. You know, it's kind of part of the Bill W gang, you know, and that's my flag. And because of that, people recognize it and they can talk to me, you know, if they need help. I've had more than one person approach me because of this necklace, you know, needing help. And I was able to help them. that same kid is now 18, you know, and she told me right before she turned 18 that she wanted to go back and live with her mom. Did I want her to go? No. Was I hurt? Yes. Was I sad? Yes. But the program of Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to stand there with pride and tell her I love her. No, I did not agree with her decision, but I sent her with love, you know, and let her know that I'm here for her. And it was a great little over 2 years, you know. It taught me how to be a dad, you know. It taught me how to be a friend to my kids, you know. It taught me that what I'm doing isn't for nothing, you know. Yeah, my life's good. I've got a career, you know. My freaking job just gave me a freaking ridiculous raise because of you guys showing me how to suit up and show up, you know. Instead of bitching about when they ask me to do something, no problem. If I got questions, I'll come ask, you know. They trust me with money. They trust me with keys to their vehicles, you know. That wasn't the case back then. Today, my life is full. I have hope, even when I don't feel hopeful, you know. I know that there's an answer for whatever that is plaguing me, and it's usually just this thing. I have a higher power in my life that doesn't cease to amaze me, you know. Every time I think it can't get any better than this, it does, so I just quit saying it. It can't get any better than this because it proved me wrong every freaking time, you know. I was struggling here, I don't know, a couple months ago, because we were living at my mom's house, and things were starting to go downhill, and I had no idea what to do. Had no clue. I knew we needed to get out of there, but I had no options at the time. And all of a sudden, buddy of mine needed a roommate. Sweet, you know, and it worked out. The kid's happier, I'm happier, you know, she's happier. When she's happy, I'm happy. Happy wife, happy life, right? You know, and it's just a miracle that I get to do this on a daily basis, you know. It's a freaking miracle. If you're new, just keep coming back. Get a sponsor. Get a big book. Work the steps. And work them like your life depends on it. Because if you're anything like me, your life does depend on it. I still today, with a little over 8 years of sobriety, have to do this like my life depends on it. You know? Because my life does depend on it. If I quit doing this, you know, I'm going to drink. Or if I don't drink, I'm going to freaking kill myself or somebody else or whatever, you know. Just because I'm sober and I've worked the steps multiple times doesn't mean my life is perfect. You know, I still get in self-will. I still let my character defects ruin my day. But today, I think my most important tool in my spiritual kit is the lesson of pause, you know, to stop and think about what's going on, to think about my reaction, and instead of reacting, responding in a proper manner. And most of the time it works. Sometimes I forget to pause and I fly off the handle and then I have to go make amends, you know. I do my 10th step every night. My last cigarette of the day, I go out into the dark corner of the house outside and I look up at the stars and the moon if it's out, And I thank my higher power for another day of sobriety, and I run through my day and make a mental note if I have to make any amends. And because if I don't do that promptly, I'm going to forget about it, and it's going to sneak up, and it's going to fester, you know. And as an alcoholic, I like to pole vault over rat turds. And so if I don't take care of shit quick, you know, then it's just, it's messing with me, you know. It messes with my serenity. It messes with my peace. It makes the wife unhappy. And I don't like her to be unhappy, because then I'm unhappy. And then I usually have to make an amends. And I don't like to make amends. You know, my life is good today. I've got a roof over my head. I've got a kid that loves me. I've got a wife that loves me, despite myself. I've got friends that show up, you know, say, hey, I'm going down to Santa Maria. Anybody want to go? You know, probably freaking 6-7 guys down here with me tonight. You know, so now you guys got 6 or 7 new speakers coming up in the next couple of months. There's that bus again, you know. It's funny because I used to be a bus driver, you know. But I went from being tattooed white trash to Caucasian debris. You know, and I get to keep moving up those steps. I don't know what the next step's going to be, you know. Oh, I've gotten more tattoos in sobriety than I ever did out there, you know. I love my ink. I love being colorful. I wish I could have brought my kid with me tonight. You guys would have got a kick out of her. Little 2-year-old Spitfire, man. Freaking kid's amazing. I want to grow up to be like her, you know? And I have so much love in my life today that I never even thought possible. You know, it's all because of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Stripping off the armor of that tough machismo freaking little scared little boy, you know, and just being vulnerable and having feelings, you know. A feeling isn't going to kill you. You may feel like it's going to, but it's not. Feelings come and go. Emotions come and go. It gets better. It gets worse. The roller coaster doesn't stop. You know, it goes up. It goes down. Sometimes it's up and down. Sometimes it's up. And then sometimes it's down. Sometimes it's just a nice flat line for a while, and all of a sudden the bottom falls out of it. You just hold on to your fucking seat and call your sponsor and dig into the steps, and you'll make it through without having to drink. Thanks.
Okay, thank you to Mike again.